This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. For over 40 years, Wings Press has published works of poetry, fiction, and nonfiction. As a small and remarkable independent publisher, it has fought to bring diverse voices into the world. Bryce Milligan has been the man behind the press for most of those years. Milligan is an accomplished writer himself and has recently published his own book of poetry, Take to the Highway. Milligan's work is being celebrated at Beale House Arts Saturday from 2 to 4 with an afternoon with Bryce Milligan, along with a retrospective exhibit of his book design work.
The title of this exhibit is Necessary Work, and I feel that a lot of what I do is necessary to bring voices into the literary forum that had difficulty getting there, to bring ideas that are sometimes new. When the Fukushima disaster happened, we got the very first book out about the Fukushima disaster within a year of it. So there's a lot of nimbleness that a poetry publishing company like myself can accomplish that the big companies can't, but also diversity. We've always been committed to multicultural literature at Wings Press since the beginning. And my own work, I began as a folk singer in the early 70s, late 60s, and it was all about protest, and then it continued to grow.
Wings Press, what do people not understand about Wings Press? What do they don't get?
Well, I don't know that they need to get anything, but Wings has been in operation since 1975, and I took it over in 1995. It has over 60% of our authors are women. Over 50% are Latino. We have authors from all over both hemispheres. We have authors that were born in China, Argentina, Chile, England, as well as we have the Poets Laureate of six different states, and the first two Latino Poet Laureates of Texas, Carmen Tafoya and Rosemary Katakalis. So it's a wide-ranging press. We do fiction, nonfiction, poetry, experimental work. We focus on good design and important work. And we're, you know, part of the modern world as well. Every book that comes out is also available as a Kindle or as a an ebook from Barnes & Noble or from a library PDF. So everything's available in all the formats.
But it seems that people don't understand the scope and the scale of Wings Press, particularly maybe here in San Antonio, because it seems we see you around town, we see Wings Press, and we don't understand that it's not a local press. I mean, it may be based in San Antonio, but it's not a local press. It is a national press.
Yeah, it is.
And so when people miss that, it's
well,
like,
people sometimes have the misapprehension that Wings is a fairly large company, and it's a one-man operation. I'm the publisher, editor, and designer. We do have global distribution out of Chicago through the Independent Publishers Group, but it's pretty much a one-man operation, and people often wonder what my selection policy is, and it's highly idiosyncratic. It's what I like, and I kind of like living that way.
But also, in addition to being the publisher and designer of the books and everything else, and your view of looking at books as an object of art, and that is something that's going to be on display at the Beale House.
Yeah, the Beale House exhibit is I'm very honored that the Beale House did this, and I'm very grateful to the curator Agnes Chelblikow, who's the rare books librarian at UTSA, for doing this, because it brings together 20 years of creativity, but they focused really on a lot of the handmade stuff, because I like to have a hand physically on the books. And so although we do have larger books that are published and distributed in the normal fashion, we also do a lot of handmade chapbooks with letterpress covers on handmade paper and hand sewn by me while I'm sitting there watching Rachel Maddow. or listening to you.
But you also are a poet in your own right, mm-hmm. and you just released a collection of your own poems. This is not from Wings Press.
No, this is from West End, which is extremely left-leaning press in Albuquerque. It's run by a guy named John Crawford, and the title is Take to the Highway, Arabesque for Travelers. It's divided into three sections. The first is environmental poetry for the most part. The second is prose poems that form a sort of poetic autobiography. And then the third section is farewells of one sort or another. My mother died a couple of years ago, and a lot of those poems are dedicated to her, but also farewells to various ideas.
Can you give us a reading?
Sure. I like to read a poem called High Country Caravan first. It's for my wife, Mary. We like going to New Mexico and driving up in the mountains like every other Texan. And it's also in memory of Steve Frumholz. A long, long time ago, Steve wrote a song called High Country Caravan. And I'd also like to remember Guy Clark, who just passed on Tuesday. I sang in a little club in Dallas called the Rubaiyat when I was growing up, and Guy was there, and Steve, and a whole bunch of other Ray Wiley Hubbard and people. I was a young kid, and they would critique my songs. It was the best creative writing class ever. They'd leave blood on the floor. And anyway, this poem is called High Country Caravan. We drive 1,000 miles out of the sodden south for this. The swish, the whispers, and the big sage, murmurs in the piñones and the highland pines that rise above the scrub, lifting their dark and drowsy crowns in an acclamation of elegance. Your shadow-dappled arms draw me higher still, off on a high country caravan, singing the old songs again, seeking the silver-shaking aspen.
The book is about traveling and looking at the world through the windshield.
Yeah.
And
I actually have a poem in here that's looking through the windshield.
So you're invoking the sense of awe that you see as you...
I don't know that I'm invoking anything. I have a tendency to write while I drive, which can be dangerous. But... I get a lot of ideas when I'm in the car and rolling, the rhythm of the road, the rhythm of the landscape rolling past. But travel is not always you moving. It's the world moving past you. And so a lot of this is involved with trains, but not so much riding them as it is hearing them. I'd like to read another poem. It's called Nocturne for Bell Song and Train Horns. You know, we have an issue here in San Antonio about silent zones. Some people don't want to hear the trains, and some of us absolutely. Naomi Nye is another one who just absolutely adore the sounds. So this is called Nocturne for Bell Song and Train Horns, and it's what I hear every night when I go to sleep. Last night the carillon sang of itself, as it will when the evening winds befriend the eastbound bats and the undampered brass can hum unhammered, trending with the wind. Beyond the bell song, far trains rumble. 2.5 miles exactly southeast of my pillow, some Amtrak engineer feathers his low horn like coal train easing his way into some newborn melody. And so we enter the night. Evensong yields to the nocturne sung by the silver trains, holding back for the main act as if asking, is anyone here, anyone at all? Silence follows, dense and dark, and I slip once more toward the borders of sleep when bells break out. Crossing bells now, less than a mile. Corded horns thrum loud, rising, insistent. They demand, are you there? And I reply, speaking to the night, speaking to the trains, as Samuel spoke to the Lord from his cave, I am here.
So there is a conversation going on between you and the train.
And the trains, yeah.
So there's a relationship.
There's a very much a relationship, and it goes back in my family for three generations.
I do want to go back to the Guy Clark stuff because, you know, he did pass this week, and he's such a dynamic writer, and he was so hard on himself when it came to writing.
Yeah.
And I want to know more about what was that experience like to be critiqued by him?
Well, Guy was a poet that, you know, found himself writing songs, and but he thought of it as poetry. And so he approached it that way. Many, many, many drafts of songs before they ever reached anybody's ears. But they have that country honesty to them that you just, you know a Guy Clark song when you hear it. I had a great experience. I was in L.A. just recently for the AWP conference and, you know, driving down the L.A. freeway, and you can't help but sing out loud, you know. If I can just get off of this L.A. freeway without getting killed or caught.
Guy Clark wrote about very personal things.
Oh, I love that song about his Randall knife, you know. His dad's knife. I've got a poem about it, one of my grandfather's knives, too.
Things that were very personal and also very, very, very Texas, a very sense of place. Where do you go for a sense of place?
I drive 281 a lot, and I love the stretch between Blanco and Hyco, Texas. And then, of course, my favorite place on the planet is the McDonald Observatory. So those are really key to my personal experience of
and
Texas.
And how does that find its way to the page?
Well, I guess it's the landscape of your mind. Of course, San Antonio is very much a part of me as well. I've lived in the same house downtown since 1979.
In King William.
In King William. And, you know, we got the house when it was affordable and needed a lot of work. And I've put a lot of work into it over the years. And so you feel very much one with the trees, one with the place. The the river in the background is always there.
This is Texas Matters. I'm David Martin Davies, and I'm talking with Wings Press publisher Bryce Milligan about his work and publishing. When it comes to running a press like Wings Press, I mean, you've had 40-plus years now, over 200 books?
Yeah. Joni Whitebird started the press in 1975, and one of the first things she published was Towns Van Zandt's songbook, For the Sake of the Song. I took it over in 94. I actually bought it in 95, and our first book came out in 96. Joni only published about 25 books in that time period. And when I took it over, I had to promise her that I would keep it going, and I did. I've done 210 books since then.
How does Wings Press continue to deal with challenges, existential challenges?
Some things have changed radically. One is that the reviewing outlets like Publishers Weekly, Booklist, Library Journal, used to, you just send them a book and it was judged on its merit and you'd get a review. For years, we got lots of starred reviews in those publications. And so librarians everywhere, bookstore managers and buyers would be able to access that information. That has changed. In the last 5 years, unless you buy serious advertising, you don't have much of a chance of getting the reviews that we did.
Is it because it's a crowded market? What's happened?
Well, it's hard to explain. I've been told to my face, buy ads and we'll review you. And I think that's unethical. It's not the way reviewing is supposed to work. You know, for a long time, I was the book critic for the Express News. And then I freelanced. I've written a couple thousand book reviews in my life. And ethics has a lot to do with how you approach reviewing a book. I think the worst review is not to review it, but to not get reviewed because you didn't buy an ad, that sucks. Anyway, we keep it up. People hear about us. People know Wings. They know our reputation. You always depend on poets, especially, to get out and sell their own books because they give readings. That's where people hear poetry. You know, unless your name's T.S. Eliot, people don't walk into a bookstore and say, I want that, you know, poetry book. They have to know who you are. And they do that through hearing readings and through reviews.
So how many copies of a book does it have to be sold in order really to make it viable?
That changes with every book because every book's a different size, different materials, different, you know, amount of money that goes into it. But we do tend to print about 2,000 copies of a poetry book and novels, 5,000, 6,000. We also do some children's books and illustrated poetry books. Steve Schneider is one of my poets down in the valley, and we've done a couple of books of his where his wife did the illustrations in full color, and then we do completely bilingual poems. Even the English and Spanish are in different colors. Hardcover books. We've sold his first one, Borderlines, drawing border lives, you know, probably 15,000 copies. Carmen Tafoya, we did a children's book of hers about Emma Tenayuca, That's Not Fair, No Es Justo, and that one sold very, very well, too. So it's a wide range of books that we do.
So do you get a lot of submissions from people? How do you do?
I used to get a huge amount of submissions. For a long time, I sort of thought it was ethical that I must accept anything that came through the door. And then I started getting several thousand a year, which was more than I could actually read even the cover letters. And so I put a sign up on the website that says, we don't take open submissions. People still send me things, though. I probably get 30 or 40 a month. I know that I have over 200 working authors, including people that are in some of the anthologies. You know, they have first call on me now.
This era that we're in, is it a tough time for small independent presses like Wings, or have we been in a golden age? When was that?
The golden age of small press publishing was toward the end, just before computers came in. There are probably more small presses now because of computers than there were back in the 80s and before. But
because people can do pagination on their home computer.
Oh, yeah. I did a couple of years where I actually did 25 books a year. That's a book every 2 weeks. That was physically impossible to do that in the old days when it was hot wax and X-Acto knives. You know?
Yeah. Having more out there has diluted the market, or it's anyone can be a publisher, and so therefore
anyone can be a publisher if you want to put the time into it and do it. But there's a lot of self-publication now on Amazon where people, you know, just send their manuscript in, say they're going to have a book, and it gets out, and it's doesn't benefit from having an editor, having a designer, having that conversation, that editorial conversation. Some of the books that I publish go through, you know, 8, 10, 15 drafts of back and forth between me and the author before they ever get to paper. And that improves the quality of the book considerably.
Can you give us one last reading?
Sure. This lovely broadside that was printed and will debut this Saturday at the Beale House. It was printed by Leo Lee at the School by the River Press, which is part of the Southwest School of Arts, on paper made by Beck Whitehead, and it's Mahogany Blues. And it's actually about one of my guitars, 1938 Martin. Mahogany Blues. I have caressed this mahogany neck. These strings that sing and shimmer above the ebony, grooved deep beneath taut steel and calloused fingers, of all the blues men who made love to her through the long boxcar nights when she sang alone above the thrumming steel, and through those long duets when her lover's lovers drank in her blue soul. I have caressed this mahogany neck, wrung out that one blue note so sweet, so high, it hangs above the room and will not resolve, will not settle into this chord or that, major or minor, will not fail or diminish, but leaves an absence in the mind, leaves the desire, for the return of an echo you know is there, but cannot hear.
Bryce Milligan is a writer, editor, publisher, book designer, and more. Milligan's work is being celebrated at Beale House Arts Saturday from 2 to 4 with an afternoon with Bryce Milligan.